And it is Aleksandar Mitrovic, the main man, the stepping forward. Goals galore for Serbia. But can David Marshall keep him out? Aleksandar Mitrovic has to score for Serbia. And Marshall has saved! Yes! One big yes! It's a happy ending for Scotland for a change! The time has come! The time really has come! A night for the players! A night for the fans!
Mister, your eyes are full of hesitation. She makes me wonder if you know what you're looking for. Baby, I wanna keep my reputation. I'm a sensation. You try me once, you beg for more.
Right, lads, I can't believe I'm actually getting to say this. Finally, after so many years, but Scotland are going to the Euros. Euro 2020 will have us there after a dramatic night against Serbia. We were talking in our last podcast that there was a fair chance it was going to end up going to penalties. Wouldn't you just know it? It did. We held our nerve. We beat Serbia 5-4 in penalties, and we're going to the Euros. Yes, the game's maybe at Hampden and Wembley, but it doesn't take anything away from me. We're reconvening the Burst Ball podcast literally, what, about 12 hours after full time, just because we're all so buzzing. I've got Callum Scott with me, Hamish Carton. How are you doing, Callum?
I say it every podcast, Hamish, but I'm delighted to be here. But today, I'm delighted to be here. And I'm honestly, can't wipe the smirk off my face, man. I'm so happy.
Matt Finlay, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm absolutely buzzing. Can't believe we're actually here, being able to do this podcast. So yeah, looking forward to getting into it.
Callum Fisher,
bit surreal. Still hasn't really sunk in after all the kind of podcasts sitting in the wee uni studio after several failures, and it's surreal. And obviously, it's Burstball that made it happen because we all said we were gonna win. So the country owes us a huge debt, I believe.
Yeah. Just a totally amazing feeling. Casey, we were chatting just before we started recording there, and I think we'd all imagined what this would feel like because we'd hoped for it so many times over the years, only to be disappointed. But I don't know about you, but for me, this has even exceeded those expectations.
No, 100%. As you say, we did speak about it before we came on, and we've pictured it so many times. And we've been so close so many times, but yesterday it was, and I mean, I'm in the manner in which we won it as well, it's just, it made it all the sweeter. I mean, I know we'll go into it and actually analyse the game itself, well, to some extent, and the best I've seen Scotland, but the most comfortable I've seen us in such a big game, and it was a real sickener to concede the goal at 90 minutes. But nah, it's unbelievable, and it was the other post-match stuff as well, seeing all the videos of the dressing room, seeing Ryan Christie's interview with Stevie Clark, everybody's post-match reactions were just exactly how us as fans felt. So for every one of the guys in the part today out last night, they'll go down to some extent as legends, because they're the first team to get us there in 22 years, and can't wait for June 2021.
Yeah, it was kind of the ideal way to do it in many ways, Matt. Yes, we would have wanted to win 1-0, and we really wanted to hold on when we were ahead going into stoppage time. And it was an absolute bitter pill to swallow when they scored. And speaking for myself, I thought it was at that stage, I thought it was over. I just didn't see us recovering from that. I was thinking Atletico Madrid 2014 Champions League final, they're 1-0 up, Ramos scores last minute and they completely collapse. I honestly expected us to lose that 3-4-1 in extra time. We somehow dug into extra time. Penalties, don't get me wrong, was completely nerve-wracking, but I was kind of happy with it at that stage. I was accepting my fate, and whatever happened, happened. But we took them like Germans, didn't we?
Oh, no, definitely. Efficiency is what they would say with the Germans. But genuinely, like, you're superb. I mean, that's two penalty shots now, no misses, you know, like, and you've got to think as well, like, if three of the subs that kind of came off, you know, to obviously try and shore up the defence late on, they were penalty takers, you know. On that regard, I think as soon as that goal goes in, when they go back to the restart, you're just like, you know, taking penalties all day long here. Because as a good comparison there with the Atletico final from a few years ago, they just did collapse. And you've seen it, the players were a bit like, what's the shape here? We couldn't really figure it out. And then, you know, you had a lot of kind of, it was just a bit disjointed throughout the extra time. And then you're like, right, get to penalties. Yeah, you know, he got Griffiths on. You know, he got Griffiths on at the right time. Just, I don't even think he touched the ball. Like, and then came on, takes his penalties. So, excellent penalties. You know, like the commentators as well were saying, like the Serbian keeper had saved four penalties this season already, and you're just like, of course he has. You know, everything about that was just like added to the pressure. But I think, you know, going first was always a wee bit nerve-wracking, but like when Griffith steps up and it just makes it, you're like, right, relax, breathe. You know, and they were excellent penalties, so yeah, brilliant.
I was absolutely convinced that McBurnie was going to miss his penalty just because, and nothing against him, he was really poor when he came on and he took his penalty really well. It was probably one of the better ones, but I was just totally convinced with the whole, you know, status with the Tartan Army and the Scottish media, that he was going to be the one that missed, because I just thought it'd be up and it'd be a casual penalty. But apart from that, I had faith that the rest of them would score. I had no doubt about Kenny McLean, even though it was at a pivotal time. I had no doubt about McTominay really either. Lee Griffiths, obviously, it just goes in. Is it Callum McGregor was the other one? So they just took them so well. Serbia's penalties were good as well, but when Mitrovic stepped up, I just had that feeling that it had all just been set up for the perfect way to finish. Was that the ideal way to win and to qualify, Fisher?
I think it's probably the most stereotypical Scottish way to do it. You know, we're pretty much there, and then we lose the goal in the last minute, and then we have to go through the rigmarole of extra time and then penalties. You know, we can't really do anything easily. As Scotland, I thought, just kind of following on from Casey's point, that's the best I've seen Scotland play maybe ever, like genuinely in a big game. We were just so controlled and just disciplined. We were good with the ball. We completely stopped the likes of Milinkovic, Savic, Tadic, Mitrovic playing. Obviously Jovic scores a goal, but he didn't really do too much before then. I think he had one sort of chance, but I was always confident going into extra time. I thought we'll weather the storm a wee bit here, because Serbia didn't look like scoring unless we made a mistake, and obviously, unfortunately, McTominay kind of just switches off for a brief moment, which allows Jovic to score. But I generally thought Scotland were brilliant last night. As I say, the best part of the game from Serbia's point of view was those 15 minutes extra time, and then second half we kind of regained our composure, sought out the penalties, and then, as you say, Hamish, all the penalties were superb. So every game with Scotland's a bit of a roller coaster in it, but that last night in particular, for the majority of it, I thought was actually quite calm. But then obviously you've got the kind of late drama and just the kind of typically Scottish bit of it at the end. But just generally credit to the management staff and the players, because I thought they were absolutely excellent last night.
I think, like as you say, it was almost too easy for the majority of the game, and it was too straightforward. And I always had the fear going into the last 10 minutes that Serbia were going to create at least one big chance, and obviously the goal comes in the 89th or the 90th minute, and it was just a real dagger to the heart at that stage. And as I said earlier, I just didn't see how we were going to recover for that. And to be fair, extra time was all about just riding our luck, basically. And I don't know if Serbia actually created much in extra time. I think probably watching it back, you would see that they didn't. But at the time, like, see when they got that corner in the 120th minute, I was just absolutely convinced that, like, see when that went for a corner, it was as if Scotland had conceded again for me, because I was totally convinced that they were going to score again. And I don't know how we would have recovered, like, from losing that game last night. Like, sitting here right now, if we'd have lost that on penalties, imagine, like, and I think that's why you've got to enjoy it so much, because it has gone against us so often over the years, but last night for once it went for us, and you know, we're at the Euros.
could just not tell, like, Ian Crocker, his commentary was, like, lining up the failures. Like, he, every time Serbia got a corner, he was like, oh, he was doing it almost like the kind of that Hibs Rangers Cup final. It was just like inevitable that something was going to happen. He was like, delivered it.
He was trying to set up like a narrative with his commentary. It was like infuriating. Like, I don't particularly think he's a great commentator anyway, but like last night he was just all over the gaff, which, so, to be fair, could be just be put down to the fact that he wants Scotland to go through so much, which is understandable. But aye, his commentary, particularly near the end, wasn't really helpful for the nerves.
Aye. I think they were also recording it on like TV as opposed to actually at the ground, because the one he had in the second half where it comes across to Robertson, like the commentators didn't have a clue until the rest of us, if you know what I mean, because obviously the camera work was another thing that was absolutely shocking. There was a moment in the second half when Robertson took a throw to a guy and the cameraman just didn't follow the ball, like he just completely missed the ball, and then that Robertson chance, it was terrible as well. It was just a bit of a shambles all round in Serbia, but who cares. In terms of the actual game, Casey, you know, a lot of people look at the fact that we've played Israel in the semi and Serbia in the final, and we've won neither of them in 90 or 120 minutes. They've both been on penalties. But last night's performance, you know, was worthy of a victory, and it would have been if we'd have held on in the 89th and 90th minute.
No, without a doubt. Obviously, you go back to the Israel game, and it just seemed to be a case of kind of two teams cancelling each other out. And then it got to that stage and kind of extra time there where no team wanted to lose it, which you always seem to find when it gets to extra time, particularly when you get into that last 5-10 minutes. I think both teams would just go for penalties then and there. But yesterday, and again, that's why it's so good the way it has eventually worked out. But I'm with you, Hamish. I'm not going to lie, I threw in the towel when they scored. And it was so harder for me than any other game, because we actually had it in our hands yesterday and we were thoroughly deserving to win that game in 90 minutes. We created more than them, we controlled the game, and there was a few crosses they had and that was it. And then when they scored for that corner, I goes, here we go. And I know Clark was getting a wee bit of stick at that point for his substitutes as well, because as Matt pointed out, that's another reason why I doubted us even in penalties, because you had Christie, McGinn and Dykes all going off, three of those guys with the hat a pen. And you're thinking, right, at that point you were actually relying on Marshall to pull it out of the bag for you. Not the kick takers then, like, they all scored, you know what I mean? But it seemed like you were missing that actual, like a guy that hits penalties for 12 yards week in, week out. What we could have done with James Tavernier yesterday, but it got to that and I thought, oh, here we go. But those were the subs I would have made, because, and I said it to a few people on Twitter, because they were saying, oh, Clark, he's left us with nothing in that, and you're like that. Realistically, we lost that game, we seen the extra time because McTominay didn't pick up his man, and I'm not throwing McTominay under the bus, I thought he was excellent other than that, but that was a massive thing. Guy has a free header for 6 yards, and it's frustrating. If McTominay picks up his man, we stroll that out in 90 minutes and it's easy. But the way we done it in the end, because all I did, I lost faith. My brother was texting me and that, saying, no, we'll do it. I was like, nah, well, no, I know that we're not going to do it. And then when Mitrovic stepped up to hit the last penalty, because I was thinking, right, you never know here. And I was, oh, no, wait, Mitrovic, I mean, surely he's got to score. And then just when I seen him open up the body and Marshall go the right way, I couldn't believe it. And I said in the last podcast about the Lee Griffiths 2 free kicks against England, about how stuff like that doesn't happen to us. And eventually it doesn't, because we essentially lost the game from that point of view, if you will, getting the draw. But that was yesterday. I mean, we control the game, we concede a terrible goal, we ride our luck for a wee period in extra time, and then the last penalty, like, that never happens to Scotland, and I'm so, so happy that honestly, it's still surreal, and I can't believe it.
It's an unbelievable save as well, isn't it? Like, it's an incredible save.
Aye, it's absolutely top class, and Marshall, it was the same in the Israel game, you know what I mean? All the guys done their jobs by scoring for 12 yards and you're waiting in Marshall. Bailing you out with one save, and he done it with the last penalty as well. Because if it was to go to sudden death, man, I don't know if my heart would have been able to take that, to be honest.
Yeah, it was the ideal way to win it in many ways, Matt. I mean, we would have loved to hold on and win it 1-0, but doing it in penalties, there was something... Something was meant about that. It was meant to happen after all those years. It was meant to go down to penalties. And I don't necessarily believe in fate and stuff like that, but But last night, that was written in the stars.
No, if you're gonna wait 20 odd years to qualify or win a cup or something like that, you know, you do it on penalties. I've been there with my own club. You know, Aberdeen's done the exact same. Like 19 years, 120 minutes, and then fucking penalties was the Stuart Milne quote after it, and it's the exact same. It's the exact same, because that kind of euphoria of a penalty shootout is so nerve wracking, but you just kind of. I think every time the Scotland player steps up, you go, right, that's when you're more nervous, because we were always going ahead. We were like taking the lead, if you like, in the shootout. It was like, right, if he misses this thing, like it's easy. It's a free hit for the Serbian player, whoever's next, because he knows that that's it. You know, like there's not as much pressure on. But then you just put that extra bit of pressure on them. And I think it was my brother who was sitting next to him. He kind of said, like claims he said, I don't remember him saying it at the time, but he said, like, when Mitrovic is coming up, I think because there's so much is made about like him and about Mitrovic, about how he's like the Premier League player at Fulham and stuff. He's a big name that we all know. You're like, oh, he's going to score. But I don't know, his body language maybe wasn't sure, because he just wasn't in the game yesterday. And you're like, well, you trust your keeper to do it. You know, and Marshall's are, you know, he's proved in the last game, you know, they all did. But as you said, if you're going to do it, you may as well just do it like that. Like, we were never going to do it simple. Despite it being as most a complete performance as I've ever seen from Scotland, certainly away from home in one of these big games. So, yeah, happy days.
Yeah, James McFadden, I think it was on telly, made the point about Mitrovic and said that he's the one who had lined himself up to be the hero in the fifth penalty taker, the guy that scores the penalty to take Serbia to the final. And the minute that was then reversed and he became the guy who had to score to stop us going to the final, it was a different mindset for him. So I thought that was a very fair point. Going first in penalties, I think, is so important, because you can put the pressure on the other team. On a separate note, whatever happened to that ABBA penalty system? Did that just get completely scrapped?
I hope so.
It was the worst. That was just, again, just typical football and authorities trying to fix what isn't broken at that point. And I was like, I couldn't believe they tried to come up with that absolutely ridiculous system.
What was it? One, then two, then...
It's like the tennis tie-break system, yeah. I thought it made sense. I thought it took the advantage away from having to always be the one who has to score, because I think that is a bit unfair. But
no, anyway. I know, but it's a penalty shootout should always exactly what it is, a shootout, you know, bang, 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 bang.
You want the
exactly
drama?
All this.
You still have drama with that.
Nah, I'm not having it.
Aye, but it's not the same.
Folk get confused. Folk would be so confused with it.
Aye, you'd probably get guys like asking their pals, like, oh, what does this mean? If he scores, are we through? Or have we got another one? Or is this one? It's just... You know what's happening. Well, everybody knew what was happening apart from David Marshall at the end. He had to check. But
I thought he was asking whether he'd saved that for us to go through, if you know what I mean.
That's
what he was
asking was,
have I stayed in my line? Because I was like, have you actually lost count? But just an amazing moment. And even that in itself, I saw folks saying the gifts of that. That's just an amazing, iconic Scotland moment. There was so many iconic moments last night that... you know, the sing-song in the changing room after the game, the Ryan Christie interview, which for me we should probably actually talk about that on its own. Because for me, I burst into tears at full time. I had this kind of overwhelming, I was just overwhelmed by emotion that I went from, you have the two kind of extremes of the biggest disappointment ever, that would have topped Italy or... you know, Poland or Slovenia or whatever for me, or Holland, if we'd have lost that in penalties last night after being 1-0 up in 90 minutes. And you've got the other extreme, which is finally doing it and qualifying, and then it just all hits you and then it's over after penalties, and it could have gone either way, and then everything just hit me. And then I kind of calmed down a bit, then Ryan Christie comes back in telly and he does his interview and he's close to tears. And there was a few other players, I'm sure Andy Robertson was close to tears in his interview. I think he'd calmed himself down a wee bit, he'd done it a bit later than Christie. David Marshall was kind of emotional as well.
Luke Shanley was emotional. Luke Shanley was doing the interviews, he could tell he was quite choking up. It's properly, yeah, sorry, Kim, just jumped in there.
No, it just means so much, I think, and we saw that last night, and I went into it in the last podcast. I don't want to do it all again, but just with the year that everyone's had, in addition to the fact that we've gone a full generation, our full lifetimes, none of us have ever really seen Scotland at an event and been interested in it at the time, and we're going to have that next summer. Like, we're going to go through all the stuff, like squad announcements, all the shit that we always just look at England and hear about. Like, oh, is he going to get in the squad? Chat you don't want to have, like, about players picking up injuries. Oh, is he going to miss the Euros? We're going to have, like...
Kit reveals. That's what I'm buzzing
about. We're going to have a song.
Panini sticker book. We're in a Panini sticker book. That's the big thing I'm taking away from that.
It's just all these things that we've always had to look, you know, over the hedge enviously at England, and even not just England, at Wales, Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, and we're actually doing it. Like, see, when I saw, there's a few things I saw last night. BBC did a graphic ahead of the Euros, and it was like ourselves, England and Wales. I think it was like Sterling, Christie and Bale or something like that. And like, that's when it hits home, you're actually going, oh my God, Scotland are actually going to this. And then UEFA tweeted, like, this is the final... These are how the groups are going to stand finally, and our wee flags on it. And it's just like, it actually hasn't sunk in yet.
Aye. It's very surreal. That's what I was thinking last night. Like, it's just all the build up to the tournament, and obviously you always hear about, like, the England players picking up injuries, and like, this is going to be the squad and the squad announcements and stuff like that, and like, that's going to happen to us for a change. It's just a really nice feeling. And as you mentioned, with the year we've had, I know obviously myself and you, Hamish, we're already booked up places in London for the England game, and no doubt, I think pretty much everybody we know will most likely be trying to make their way to London. Like, hopefully, fingers crossed, everything's kind of back to normal by then, and folk can just go in, and we can just go and enjoy it, because it's going to be like a lifetime event, to be honest, for us, because we've not seen it before. It's nothing that any of us have ever experienced, because obviously at club level you've got different levels of experience in terms of like folk that have seen their team win trophies and stuff like that, whereas nobody, well, obviously folk in Scotland have seen their team at a major tournament, but for like our generation, our age, our kind of group of friends and stuff like that, we've never seen that, and it's something we're all going to get to do hopefully together next summer, and it'll be fucking carnage, man, if everything's back to normal. It'll be brilliant.
Oh, it's just going to be, it's going to be incredible. Anything else for last night? I mean, anything else? There's probably hundreds of things you could talk about, Casey.
More a personal thing that's just quite funny, but it doesn't matter a jot to me, because the most important thing was us going through yesterday. But you'll remember, obviously, Ross Clark posted in the chat about the kind of enhanced odds that McBookie were doing, right? So obviously it was only a maximum bet of tenner, and it was all like singles you could do. So I picked it, right? Tenner in Scotland to qualify at 5-1, right? Ryan Christie to score anytime, 6-1, and then Scotland to win in penalties, a fiver on that as well, at 16-1. So it would all come in essentially, right? And I text about three or four people these exact things, right? Like, to be like, look at this, you've got to go on this. And then when Christie scored, I went to check my account, and I was like, why is there £20 in my account? Like, if anything, it should be 30. None of the bets went on, man. And I was like, honestly, I've actually got everything to prove it. I texted about three or four different folk, put them in group chats and that, but like, you need to go on this. And obviously, Ebo, who I spoke about in the last podcast, he won money off it. So I'm like, listen, I should be getting a finder's fee for this, man. I've made everybody else money. And then one of my other mates phoned me, being like, oh, see, your bets come in. I goes, nah, you're not going to believe this, mate. They've actually, no, I've still got 20 quid sitting in my account here, man. But nah, I was actually, it's funny, in a couple of weeks it'll probably sink in, because I said I've just moved out as well. I could have probably been doing it, but yesterday I was actually, kind of, like, usually I would have been going nuts a lot, but I was like, I didn't really give a shit yesterday, to be honest, man. I was just so buzzing that Scotland gets through. But it's just a wee funny story to tell for if MD's interested in that.
I think as well, seeing the reaction of just everyone on your social media channels, like everyone, even folk who just like aren't football fans, you know they're not football fans, they're like, even they're kind of getting in amongst it, and it properly like kind of hits home when you see it, even you know, just when you see everyone getting involved on it, like liking the tweet, sharing the stuff, you know, just like folk are just that realistically haven't got it. But then the national team, we've talked about it, I think, before on the apathy towards like the national team from a lot of sections of the support, and like folk have kind of just gone, not really that fussed about Scotland anywhere. But you see it when there's a national when there's a big event on like this, you know, everyone's tuned into their tellies. And, you know, going into these games, I think it was more going into the Israel game, like, it just didn't feel like a big game initially. And I think, and I said it last week, sorry, the last week, the other day when we were on the pod, this week it did feel different. Like, it felt the norm of a big game for Scotland. Like, but there was a difference. I mean, you know, obviously nobody's going to get to go to the game. Everyone's going to be tuned into the telly, you know, even, we talked about it, even Sky making the game free for folk, you know, anyone could watch it. There was no way you couldn't watch it last night. And I think just seeing that and that buzz that it generates off of it, and Ryan Christie summed it up perfectly in his interview, you know, he says, like, you know, they've been able to give some cheer to fan folk who's had a, who've all, the whole world's had a shit year, you know, but like, if you want to tailor it to Scotland, you know, it's been, you know, it's been bad in so many ways. Football as well has had a kick in as well. Like, in the whole game is kind of, you know, taking a, you know, it's like they're wanting fans back. And I just feel like everything, it just feels so good. It just genuinely feels so good to kind of be able to actually just do it. And whether we can even go to the games or not next year, you know, like, you're hoping that at least some things are relaxed, that you can go and be able to kind of see it with your mates, see it with your family, and that, and that's just it. And I think that just, for me anyway, that just is the big thing, the big takeaway from it all.
It's just a feeling of immense pride, innit? Like, I've had family members from England text me just saying, like, oh, it's like, you must be buzzing, obviously. So, like, obviously everybody in the country in terms of the UK is taking note of the fact that Scotland are at a national tournament again. I mean, for me this morning, I was just kind of flicking through YouTube, and Ali McCoist was down doing work for ITV at Wembley, funnily enough, and he's just Ali McCoist is like my all-time hero, which is bizarre given I never actually got to really see him play, but he's like my all-time hero, and he's generally just near enough greeting, like, live on ITV when they're standing in the middle of Wembley, with Lee Dixon in that, and he's just beaming with pride, and it's just nice to see you can just take so much pride in your country and in the national team, and to see that he's there at like the home of English football or whatever, like with English fans that are pundits and former England internationals, and he's just talking with so much pride and enthusiasm about Scotland. It's just, I've said that about a million times, but it's just surreal, but it's just so nice to see. And that was, obviously you guys were spoken about like tears and that was a bit that kind of got to me a wee bit, because he's just such an infectious character, and the enthusiasm and just, as I say, beaming with pride was just, it's just lovely to see.
Just touching on that, you know, like, I mean, but McCoy's and all that, you saw it as well, like, even with the, you know, Fletcher and McFadden in the studio, like, I mean, I think, I personally, as a pundit, I think Darren Fletcher's very good anyway, very articulate, comes across really well, like, knows the game. I think McFadden's had a bit of stick, I think, because he's been on, like, he's always on a bit, maybe a bit more droll and all that, but you saw the passion coming out with them, you know, you saw the video of them celebrating the Galway like Barber as well, but like, I think just the way they were talking to the whole game, they were so positive about it that, you know, that was our generation of like, kind of, you know, it was failed campaigns, but you kind of lived every moment with these two iconic players, for, you know, Fletcher being a captain and then McFadden giving us our best moments, and now we've got like, they've just missed out, and, you know, it's like, they'll be going as fans. You know, that's the great thing about it, is that they're, you can tell they're not envious. They're literally, so I know we're buzzing because we've played with all these players. We're all proud of these, you know, this squad. They know the squad. McFadden was part of the backroom staff as well. So he technically, if you want to say it, he's been there with these players and was helped with that. And you just see the reaction from these ex-players. It's really nice to see. And for the next week, it'll be like that. And if you listen to Sports Sound and all that, it's not going to be the doom and gloom from Tom English about how the game's shite. It's going to be...
Round table, man. That's what I was feeling. See when that header went in, the Sports Sound round table that you get every couple of years trying to dissect which
one
of the game.
Well, I was going to say there with Matt, and I agree wholeheartedly, but I'm sorry to say, I still think Willie Miller will have something negative to say about us.
You'll find something about the marking in a corner.
Yeah, it was when you're talking about McFadden and Fletcher there, it is crazy, and it's something that struck me last night, and I don't know if this has just passed me by over the years, but those two, like, their entire careers for Scotland, they didn't qualify for anything. Like, it is quite weird to actually fathom that their entire careers was just failure, failure, failure. And then folk like Andy Robertson comes along, and then a couple of years, if that, after being made captain, he's taken us to Euros. You know, Lyndon Dykes comes in after four games and he's qualifying for a Euros after, you know, a quarter of a century of hurt. So it's just, it's crazy looking at that. When we're talking a minute ago there about next summer, like, I know this isn't a scientific or even a political podcast, but you would hope that with better weather and a potential vaccine coming, and just the fact that it's still like 6 or something months away, it's in the middle of June, so it's like the height of the British or European summer. You would hope that things are in a place where we can get fans into Hampden for that. Surely, I still doubt it would be 52,000 into Hampden. I doubt that. But surely we can get 20, 25,000 into Hampden in the height of summer with a vaccine in place. Surely.
You'd hope so. I mean, things are obviously changing so quickly at the moment. And I guess, going back to a previous point, that's what's so good about the win, is that it's given the country a lift, when all we seem to be getting at the moment is negative news about, you know, case rates and where we're going to be and restrictions and all that. So, yeah, I don't see full capacity stadiums next summer, unfortunately. I'd love to be wrong, but I hope you're right, Hamish. I hope we can at least get folk in Hampden. Even you know, restricted capacity would be great. And at least at that point, hopefully, as I say, folk can go down to London or whatever and enjoy themselves and enjoy the occasion. And at least hopefully there's a feeling in the air that we're just about out of the woods in terms of the whole coronavirus thing, because that would be a brilliant thing for us for Scotland to reach a tournament, and then given everything that's happened, for us to then just to be able to go and enjoy it at a point where we're out of the woods with coronavirus would be brilliant. A great way to top off what's been an absolutely shite year. So
exactly. I think Matt mentioned James McFadden and Alec McLeish a minute ago, and we should probably just mention in the podcast as well, as I drop my phone, that, you know, McLeish, as much as he came in for a lot of criticism, and rightly so, I think, for some of the performances we've put in that qualification campaign, and I don't think for a minute if we had Alec McLeish in charge that we'd have gone last night and, you know, got a result in Serbia, or even probably got a result against Israel. But you have to give him some sort of credit in the fact that he was the one, and another player, Alan McGregor, who's no longer with the team, made an incredible save in that Israel game, I seem to remember, that got us top of the Nations League and got us into that playoff. So I think there's a couple of guys there, and obviously like James McFadden, I think Peter Grant was part of that as well. You've got to pay some sort of credit for the fact that they got us to the playoffs and they've helped Steve Clarke. But just on Steve Clarke, KC, I know you're his biggest fan. You're not the only Steve Clarke fan in Scotland now. There's far more. To be fair, there was far more before last night, but basically everyone's a Steve Clarke fan. Just trying, if you can, put into words what he has done for this country.
I said from day one that I remember having discussions with Kilmarnock fans who were upset at him leaving to take the Scotland job, because people were thinking it was a poison chalice, and you know, you wanted one more season at McKellie, maybe a chance of silverware, and maybe we'd get past the first round in Europe if he stayed as well. But I said at the time, I goes, listen, Steve Clarke for the rest of his life, he'll never top what he did at Kilmarnock. It would have been a big ask to go and do that for another season. And he'll never need to buy a pint in Kelly for the rest of his life, if you want to look at it that way, right? And I said that he's got to take that Scotland job, and it's a case of winning two massive games, Israel and whoever we got in the final, be it Serbia or Norway. And I said he'll be looking at that. I remember people so overreacting at the beginning with a lot of these results against, Cyprus wasn't great, but we beat them. In his first game, the Belgium and Russia games would get turned over, but he was trying out new systems and getting used to it. And I've said, and I could understand why people are frustrated by performance, but I said, he's here to win two games, and that's exactly what he's done. And the way Clarke will look at it now, he's the best Kilmarnock manager, arguably at least since Tommy Burns, if not before that, certainly in my entire lifetime, highest league position since we won the league, or the year after we won the league. And now he's the first Scotland manager to take us to a major tournament in 22 years. And I said that would exactly be what he would do for day one. And that's what he knew he was going in to do. And I had every confidence that he would do it. It was frustrating listening to so many people write the team off and focusing the negative aspects of it all the time. And I'm just happy, and I'm not happy in like a sanctimonious way or on my high horse to be like, I told you so. But I did, and it was, I just knew that he was going to do the business, man, because that's what he's there to do. He gets the best out of everything that he's got. If we had a team full of world-class players, we'd be playing world-class attacking football. But you've got to, you can only go with what you've got. And he sits out teams, they're organised, they know their roles. And that's him, bear in mind, just ripped out a new formation as well in the last 6 months or so and got these players to buy into that. You're playing your back three and you've got two players out of position. Arguably, I know Tierney's now converted into a left centre-half with Arsenal. But McTominay, brilliant at centre-half. And Declan Gallagher, amazing as well. And that's one thing you've got to give Clark credit for. Look at these guys that he's brought in. I did say I wanted Cooper to start, and that was none against Gallagher. I just thought, I think you've got to play your best team, and I do think that Cooper is better than Gallagher, but that's no me having a go, you know what I mean? These guys, Lyndon Dykes getting plucked out, he's totally changed their fortunes. I could go on about him all day. Outstanding again last night. And nah, Steve Clarke, he'll always be a legend for me, and now he is for the entire country, and I'm just so happy.
I think as well what he's built for the team is that it's a pure togetherness. It really is. Like, I mean, there's been so many Scotland camps over the years where like we've just not had that togetherness, and part of that is down to it's egos of players. You know, like there's so many of them that don't buy into what a manager's for. If it, you know, like Walter Smith had it, then McLeish kind of just inherited that team because they were doing well. He built it, obviously, to get into the final few games. And then afterwards, it was maybe just like, right, the names maybe weren't as big for some of these players. You know, there was a lot of, you know, it doesn't help when players pull out of squads. You know, just like, for example, Chris Boyd, when he just retired, it's just like that just doesn't help anything. And there's been cases of that in the last few years. You know, Matt Ritchie just coming out and just saying, oh, I don't want to be selected again. Like, how sick must he be feeling right now, you know, to not be part of that?
James McArthur, is he another one?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you just look at this and you just think there's a real togetherness. Like, every penalty that went in last night got some sort of big fist pump. You know, you saw how much it meant, even to like McBurney, who's obviously been slaughtered by the press and fans and things like that. And, you know, he stuck his penalty away, big fist pumps, you know. McTominay, you saw it, you know, McTominay hadn't been in Scotland properly, I don't think, ever. We mentioned it the other day, but like little things like that, he grew up supporting Scotland. You know, these players, like, they buy into it because Stevie Clarke had gotten them going. And I just think that it meant so much to them that they all wanted to do their bit for it. And you'd have seen tears regardless last night, you know, like, and as we've touched on already, you know, Ryan Christie just summing up just exactly what we were all thinking. You know, like, as a fan, you're sitting back and going, Jesus, I wish I was in your position here, because that's yeah, what it's about, you know. And I think that Stevie Clarke's got us that belief back in his team, because as I said, sometimes it's not going to be pretty, but you know, you find the systems, you find the players, you get the players on board, and things like having a close, you know, like I've seen it to an extent with Aberdeen this season, like, you know, the kind of world's against you with the whole COVID thing, you know, the Aberdeen players doing all that, you know, you kind of huddle together, you're in your sporting bubbles, and you go, right, you know, this is, you're spending so much more time with these players, I think, as well, and it's just you guys, you don't have the fans out there at the games, and, you know, everyone was wanting them to do it last night, and I just feel that when you see the celebrations afterwards, they're all in on it, you know, everybody's going to want to play in a future squad between now and, well, for the foreseeable future, even beyond the Euros. You know, when friendlies come up, it's like, and I mean, and just on that, you know, like the fact that there's not been friendlies, it's every game has mattered. Like, and it's got a competitiveness to it. Nobody's pulling out of these squads unless they're injured. And that's the good thing. And that's really good to see.
I think it's 9 games unbeaten now, and all of them have been competitive matches, which is an incredible return. I mean, yes, we've not played what you would call a top nation, like a, you know, tier one ranking side in that time, but we've still played some good teams, you know, Slovakia, Serbia last night, I think were a good team, Czech Republic, sides like that, and we've done well. I think there's maybe an argument, and it was something that was crossing my mind last night, if these or those playoff games had been played in their normal point in March, part of me doubts if we would have got the job done. And I'm not saying that in a slight against Steve Clarke or the team at all, but what I'm saying is I think COVID situation has actually given the Scotland team a bit of a boost. It's given us these kind of triple headers of international games, which has given Clarke more time to work with his players. He's been given more games to warm up prior to these qualifiers, because I think back in March it would have been like Thursday, Sunday we would have played the games back to back in the original scheduling. So I think COVID has actually helped. It's given this team more time together as well. I mean, you know, you mentioned that Wales team from Euro 2016 that everyone goes on about, make it to the semi-finals, and I was so jealous of them that year, because they had like that country had a team they could be proud of. They had a manager and they had, you know, players in that team that they could, like, young players that bought into what Wales and Welsh football was all about. And I finally think, even though we've got a few, you know, non-Scottish born players in that team, I think everyone's buying in. Like, you can't criticise Lyndon Dykes' attitude or McTominay's attitude, where maybe in the past you could with some of the other ones. I don't know if I want to name them, but there's probably a few back in the day that you could go, was he really that committed, or was he just looking to play international football? Because I think everyone now is massively, you know, buying into it that Steve Clarke's trying to do. Tierney and Robertson's solution, or the problem, we've found a solution to that now, and no one seems to be talking about that. But that was a massive issue for ages. How are we going to fit in our two best players probably into that team? And Steve Clarke's found a solution, and I think it works brilliantly. Like, I thought Robertson last night was brilliant, and I thought Tierney had a really good game as well. Like, I just thought it really worked brilliantly. Just final point on Steve Clarke, and I'm kind of answering my question already, but has anyone got any small fears that he could be poached by anyone between now and the tournament next summer? Would he leave for anyone?
Nah, I don't think so. I think the fact that, obviously, it's such a monumental achievement for the country, he'll want to see us into the tournament. Potentially after that, I think there's probably every chance, because with this achievement on the back of what he did at Kilmarnock, as we've spoken about, I think his stock probably couldn't be much higher at the moment. But I don't think there's any chance he's leaving until after the tournament.
You see it as well with the team that he's got around him. I watched that. I don't know if any of you've seen it. The SFA did that kind of the coaches round table type thing. I actually thought it was really good, because it was long form. It was actually, like, you know, they're just sitting, and you saw a different side of Steve Clarke, certainly, a bit of kind of. A proper banter. I mean, I still find it weird he's sitting in a tracksuit. I don't think I can buy into the Steve Clarke track, the All Navy tracksuit. But, you know, just he's got a team around him, that players that folk he knows. I mean, you know, like John Carver. He's Geordie. He's not, like, you know, and he's got a couple of English guys in there. Then you've got Woods, who's a goalkeeping coach, who's obviously Scottish and stuff like that. These are all players, people he knows, people he can trust in the game, and you're like, he couldn't possibly leave anyway, but his stock obviously would become higher, because I think what you mentioned in that is obviously the day-to-day running for an international manager, while it is full-time, there's big gaps, and he mentioned specifically the November to March gap is huge, because there's no games, and especially even more so this year, because there was no games in March for ages, and it's just he'll now have a plan in place where he'll control what friendlies they want to do, you know. The good thing as well, another thing, is we're not going to be like a friendly, we're not going to be a team that'll be playing a friendly for a team going to the Euros. You know, like, normally you play remember those pointless games against France and Italy? Like, I never watched them, and it was just like, that was the tournament. We were playing in France for that friendly, and 2 months later everyone was going to France, and things like that. Is just kind of, he's going to buy into it. This is obviously now go down as his greatest feat, you know. And I just think it can only get better, to be honest. Like, I mean, we're there, you know. Like, but you'll have us structured in a way that we'll believe in ourselves in these games, because of the way that the tournament's set up. That you've got home games, and you're only going down to England, and that. Like, who's to say, you know, the way that tournament's structured, that you can't go deep in the tournament, you know. So, but I'll come to that when we get there. You know, that's a different discussion, but. No, very proud for Steve, very happy for Steve Clarke and his team.
We could give Northern Ireland a wee pre-tournament friendly warm-up game, couldn't we? See if Ian Barraclough looks frustrated.
Oh, no.
That was just the cherry on top of the cake for me last night. Right, we'll just turn. We've only got a few minutes left, guys. I posted a thing on the Twitter last night. In terms of players that could break into the Scotland squad ahead of next summer, the Theo Walcott, if you will, of the England squad for the 2006 World Cup. Are there any surprise ones that we think, players who probably haven't been capped yet? I'll just read out some of the replies that we got on Twitter. Aaron Hickey, Billy Gilmore, David Turnbull, Kevin Nisbet. Is it Lewis Hornby?
Fraser Hornby.
Fraser Hornby.
You think that Lewis Holtby played with Germany?
I don't know what I'm thinking of, to be honest. Nathan Patterson mentioned as well, probably come a bit soon for him. Lewis Ferguson, possibly. Ryan Gold was mentioned as well. Liam Henderson mentioned by our friend the Snowman. There's a lot of midfielders in there, and I think that's probably the hardest part of the team, other than left back, to break into. But I mean, there are players there that could. Are there any obvious strikers, I think, are the main one, and centre backs?
I think Nisbet's in with a chance if he keeps playing the way he's been playing. Because I think Dykes is going to be there if he's fit. McBurney, Steve Clark seems to like him, so you'd imagine that he would still be there. Well, obviously, who knows what's going to happen with Lee Griffiths between now and June. But it's a fairly, I think, apart from Dykes, I think he's the only certainty up front. I think anyone else that's in form as a striker's got a chance.
Something to note as well is that obviously the under-21s are like potentially going to go to the Euros next year. And with that, you're thinking, right, well, how many of them realistically are going to get called up for that? Because, if you're Scott Gemmell, you'd be thinking, right, I want enough of these players to, because I don't know how the rules work on ages and things like that. I don't know who becomes too old to play in that tournament if it's part of the qualification campaign. But if they were to qualify, then, realistically, how many of those players would you be thinking, right, would actually come in? Because I agree with all the names being put across, but I think realistically it's going to be the team. If you think it'll be the squad from last night, I don't know how many folk actually made. I think it's 25 or 26 he actually called up. I think you can take 30 to a tournament, something like that. So you're like, maybe there's provisional squads in that. So you're thinking, right, you're only going to be chucking in a couple of extras. Because I can't imagine that, it'd be like Ryan Fraser, maybe a couple more, a defender again.
James Forrest,
yeah, exactly. Forrest. And that's kind of, almost it to an extent, there'll be bit part players, but everyone's, nobody's going to be retiring from international football to now the end of the year, so it'll be interesting to see, but I don't think there'll be a lot of shifting, especially with the Euros potentially for the under-21s.
Exactly, it's just a weird thing to be able to chat about. I just wonder if there's any players who have retired in the past that would come back and would be allowed to come back. James McArthur has been mentioned, Scott Brown has been mentioned, Alan McGregor, I don't know. I doubt any of those would walk into that team at the moment. And I think you've got to go with the players that have got you there, because I don't think we're exactly short. If we had a right back who had retired years ago and wanted to come back.
Well, if James Tavernier, if somebody can find James Tavernier, Scottish Granny or something like that, that would be good. But to be fair, I mean, Stephen O'Donnell and Liam Palmer, Steve Clark clearly trusts both of them. So you would imagine it would have to take somebody in really, really good form to shift those two between now and the summer.
Yeah, Mikey Johnson's my shout as well. Everyone's kind of forgotten about him. And I think if we need a wee left winger to add something, I know we don't play with a left winger, but if he wants to mix it up and, he wants a creative spark. Are there any players in the Scottish Premiership that stick out for you, Casey? Even maybe for Kilmarnock or Dundee United, they've got a few young players. Are any of them going to be of the kind of the level?
It's a hard one, and more so because of the 21s tournament, because those guys look, obviously get Campbell at Motherwell, who's been terrific this season, obviously Lewis Ferguson as well, but I mean it's all positions in which we're actually strong in, which is just always seems to be the frustration, as you said. I mean, well, potentially a right informed striker would be great, and then a right back as well, or a right sided centre half, but then again maybe not anymore, because I think Declan Gallagher is more than worthy. He's placed in the squad and he's placed in the starting 11 now as well, so it's a tough one, but it just shows you that even the least glamorous names, if you will, i.e. Lyndon Dykes, Gallagher, these guys have come in and been absolutely terrific for us, and it just seems to be somebody, you know, taking, these guys have just come in and taken their opportunities, as simple as that. Particularly Lyndon Dykes, honestly, just absolutely outstanding yesterday. Yeah, exactly. He wins, I can't get over how he wins everything. And he doesn't come at fills either. Like in there, how many times do you see Buzz get up to a big target man and there's always a tussle and you're like, right, he gives away free kicks all the time. But he's just, honestly, I just can't.
It's the biggest difference in football you can have as a striker who holds the ball. And see the difference, and I'm not having a, well, maybe I am, but I'm not meaning to have a go at McBurnie because he is what it is. But the difference in having Dykes, who backs in, holds the ball up, can control the one. There was one when McBurnie came on, a simple ball to control, and it got away from him, and then Serbia attacked. See the difference, and I see it with Celtic as well, when Edwards playing as opposed to anyone else. The difference when you've got a striker who can actually, when the ball's played up to him, can win fouls, win throw-ins, keep the ball, lay off other men, is huge. And I honestly, here's a massive shout, but I think Dykes will be playing English Premier League in the next couple of years. Like, I think he's that good. I think he's, I honestly think he's brilliant. And I know the fact he played with Livingston makes him unfashionable, Queen of the South, and even now he's only at Queen's Park Rangers, but I think he's, I honestly think he's got everything. He's quick, he's strong, he maybe doesn't score enough, but he can work in that. But I think he's class.
And he is still a goal threat as well, like, because look at his finishes in those last two games, the penalty box striker finishes, you know what I mean? Every penalty he hits is always just so full of confidence, just the ones at Livingston and that. I think he's honestly, he's top class, and I really do hope that he is playing as high a level as possible, because, and it's a great story, I know, he's just came for absolutely nothing, and look at him now, it's brilliant.
It's pretty rare at this level, like at the kind of level Scotland are at in international football, that you've got a striker that will consistently score anyway. So if you've got a striker that can chip in with the odd goal and bring other players in, plus give defenders a hassle, which is what Dykes did last night, then you're sorted, in my opinion.
Has the thought crossed any of your minds what you would do if Scotland actually did a Wales and ended up getting to like the semis or something like that?
Listen, I mean, see on that, and again, I'm just with, see if there's a man that can do it, it's Clark. It genuinely is, because he's just so pragmatic. And he'll just,
we're going to be the underdog in most games in that tournament, and that suits him.
And again, we'll speak about it as well. I mean, people, there'll always be some kind of dampener. People have been like, oh, we get to the Euros, but we're playing at Hampden in England, right? But you're thinking, see the position we're in? We essentially get two home games. Obviously, Czech Republic is more than winnable. Like, I'd be expecting minimum winning that. In Croatia at Hampden, you've got to fancy your chances to get something. In the next big game after that, if you're not playing at Hampden as a Scotland player, where do you want to play? You want to play England at Wembley. That's as big a game as you get. So if anything, this suits us. These fixtures, and we obviously spoke about it. Fisher pointed out Northern Ireland only 3 points last in the 2016.
They beat Ukraine and lost to Germany and Poland and still went through in their group, so it's perfectly doable.
See the eventual winners for the last tournament, Portugal, didn't even win a group game.
Aye. That was the whole thing about Portugal, that they were absolutely rotten to watch. Like, they were terrible to watch, and they went on and won it.
They didn't win a game in 90 minutes or something, wasn't it? It was like up until the semi-finals.
I think they beat Wales in 2-0 or something, but it's like, it's a tournament that's set up like four, so you're going to have 24 teams, and 16 of them, what's that, two-thirds of the tournament are going to end up in the last 16. And I remember the last 16 for the 2016, one of the games was Wales against Republic of Ireland, Northern Ireland against Wales. Like,
yeah,
that's what you're looking at. I mean, I know we've just qualified and we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, even though we're doing that, but like, let's dream.
It's exactly the group I want. Like, that's exactly, I want England. I don't care if they're meant to be miles better than us. That's the games that you want to play in. That's the games you want to see Scotland playing at a major tournament. And again, I'll say it, the closest thing you'll get to equivalent is like Scotland v England, probably with like Kilmarnock against one of the Old Firm, and look at Clark's record in those kind of games. That's the kind of odds that we'll be looking at, I reckon, particularly at Wembley. And I honestly get full faith that I'm just delighted to be there, but I think we will at least get into the knockout stages.
Well, we've said we'd qualify, and now we've said we're going to win the thing, so it's going to happen.
Just looking forward to a tournament, being able to preview it, watching the opening game, whatever that is, and knowing that we're part of it. Mm-hmm. We're not just these, you know, onlookers that are watching a thing we're not involved in. It's just
Turkey, Italy, I think, is the first game, I believe. I think Turkey, Italy.
in Rome, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. We've got to have big plans for the podcast. I don't know what we're going to do. I think a few of us are going down to London, so we may end up doing an impromptu London podcast at some stage. But
I don't expect much coherent football discussion if we do one in London.
At least Abdoulaye Diaw will be coming into that with us, I think, as well. So, buzzing.
Alan Burrows will be there in Trafalgar as well in the suit.
Unbelievable. Guys, it's been a pleasure after all the post-mortems and autopsies we've done of the Scottish national team over the years. All the heartbreak that we're able to do a podcast like this. The smiles are just etched over all of our faces, and hopefully they're etched over all of the listeners' faces as well. We've finally done it. We're going to the Euros, and it's going to be a hell of a journey. This has been Burst Ball, and we'll speak to you very soon.